Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Happy Thursday. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor. I'm the last guest host of Jeff's vacation. I'm sure you're all excited to have him back. First of all, this is only the second time I've done this, and it's very weird to sit here and talk to myself.
You can talk to me.
Thank you.
I'm engineering the show, so you can certainly just look at me like your buddy old pal, and we can kick things around.
Good. I've tried to put a good show together for everyone. We have Danielle Duggar coming on, and we also have Austin Sidwell, Angelo Fermo, and Pastor Andrew Mullick. So stick around. I think it's going to be interesting.
You've put together a better show than Jeff does.
I had to, because it would just be weird talking to myself. Or I know I'm talking to a lot of people, but I can't see them.
I understand.
But I guess maybe some of you may be wondering why, like, who is this lady? And how does she know Jeff? Why would he even ask her to do this? Because I'm not a reporter. I don't work for any news stations, and
you're not like a professional talker.
No, and I'm not a writer. I'm a mom, and Jeff and I met. Actually, I moved to Alabama almost 5 years ago, and I escaped from Washington State to basically be able to live in a state where I could raise my children and not have to worry about them being indoctrinated into an LGBTQ ideology or putting on furry costumes.
That was really the reason for the move.
Yeah.
That was it? Okay.
Yes. We traveled, during COVID, we traveled for a year. I homeschooled, we got our kids out of there, and we went back and decided we were still, you know, not able to live there. COVID, that state was shut down for over 900 days. No school. You know, I mean, they had school, but it was all, they did it virtual. You know, no church.
How old are the kids?
At the time, my daughter was in middle school, and I had a little boy that was in pre-K. And so I homeschooled kindergarten, and then my daughter through middle school.
Were you in Seattle or near Seattle?
We were right across the Columbia River in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, okay.
Right, it's like 20 minutes from Portland, Oregon. Kind of like, you know, Baldwin County to Mobile.
Okay.
And so anyway, we traveled for another year, sold our house, traveled for another year. We end up buying a house in Fairhope in March. And June is Gay Pride Month, and my husband and I were driving in our golf cart, you know, watching the sunset. And I noticed that the gay pride flag was hung on poles, like light poles going down to the bay, to the big pier. And it was hung over the American flag. And I have military people in my family. And I was like, you know, that's not okay. That's weird. Like, I'm, you know, when you're from a Democratic state, I've lived on the West Coast my whole life, you just think when you're in a red state that everybody's, you know, conservative. Mm-hmm. It just is this preconceived notion. So I was very shocked. So I went to a city council meeting, and I brought a friend with me, and she donated her time to me, which, if you don't know that, if you want to go speak it, if you want to go speak at a city council meeting, you can have someone go ahead of you and donate their time to you.
So you were brand new in the city when this happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Only a few months.
So. In Fairhope.
Mm-hmm. And so I just thought maybe they didn't really understand what this means. You know, what happens when you allow these people to take over? And there was this big festival down at the bay, and it was a gay pride festival. There was a man dressed like a woman with a beard with makeup on reading to little kids. There were STD tents that were erected. You could get tested for STDs. There was AIDS, information. They had the Human Rights Campaign had a booth. I mean, I was just blown away. And I thought, I just moved my kids over 3,000 miles uprooted our entire life, and this is happening. I was like, I can't accept that. So I went to the city council meeting, ended up speaking to them for about 6 minutes, and Jeff wrote a story. Apparently, he was sitting there in the audience, and somebody had sent it to me, and I flipped out because it had my name and my address.
Oops, excuse me.
It had my name and my address, and so what I had to do was, I can still hear that.
I know, I'm taking care of it.
This is more of a procedural step.
It is Lanisha and Cameron, but it...
Here we go.
Okay, so what I had to do, I thought, was contact Jeff, and I had no clue how to do that. So I found him on Facebook, I sent him a message, and I just said, basically, can you please remove that story? I am terrified because where I moved from, if people know where you live and they know your name, they will come after you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I can't take this story down, but I'm your neighbor. And if anything happens, let me know. And don't worry, nothing, you know, people around here won't go crazy. You'll be fine. So ended up finding out we actually go to church together. And, so we kind of have developed a friendship. We're, you know, don't always agree on everything. We're very respectful, but I love his family. His children are adorable. His wife is a saint. And I just, and so I do, what ended up happening from all of that is I started advocating for kids in our community and for families to not have gay pride festivals down at the bay, to not have a gay pride flag on poles above our American flag.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the thing that I learned living in Washington State is there seems to be this idea that if you say, I don't want that in my town, that means that you hate certain people or you're not tolerant of people that are different than you are. And how can you be a Christian when you're spreading hate? So Pastor Andrew Mullick and I are going to talk about that later on the show. But the shocking thing is that, obviously, I had no idea that Fairhope had this gigantic liberal population, mm-hmm. Which I learned, and I was advocating for the library books to be relocated that were sexually explicit, and my property was damaged. I had a death threat on another radio show I was on where I was getting threatened to be hung from a tree over these library books. And so, you know, I've been educated and I've learned a lot. And I still will continue to advocate for the things that I believe keep our communities, where people can live and let live, but they don't need to force other people to live the way they want them to.
Sure.
And expose our kids to things that we don't want them exposed to.
Yeah, and I think the kids part of that is maybe the primary concern, right? Make sure that the kids are not exposed to that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, absolutely, because what happens is they start taking on these ideas that they normally wouldn't be thinking of. And then also it's totally circumvents parental rights, because what I noticed where we lived is that these kids, it becomes a social contagion. You know, it's like the cool thing. Like, I'm not a boy anymore, now I'm a girl. And it becomes this power trip where these kids are saying, you know, this is my name, but I'm changing it, so now you need to call me this.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing is, it's all wrapped up with the this racism thing, too. That started blooming at the same time where, you know, teachers would be saying, hey, you know, can you please sit down and be quiet? And my daughter would come home and tell me that, that if the kid was not a white kid that this teacher was talking to, the kids would start screaming that you're a racist. And so it was like this whole crazy, like Animal Farm type situation where the kids started taking over the schools. and they started telling the adults what to do. All right, we're going to take a little break. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, FM 10 Talk 65. We'll be right back. Made a single person cold. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor at FM Talk 106.5. We were just kind of talking about how do I know Jeff and what am I doing here? And so,
what are you doing here, lady?
What am I doing here? So what I learned, though, moving to Alabama is that it's not, you know, just black and white. There's a lot of gray area there. And specifically in southern Alabama, where you know I live, it's you know, we've got a lot of different people, and I think that, you know, gone are the days where you can just take your kids to school and drop them off and not participate. Would I like to live in a place where I can just drive my golf cart around and, you know, bake cookies for my neighbors and not have to worry about things that are going on in the community? You know, yeah, I would like that, but that's just not the case. I don't think that's the case anywhere that you move. You can move to, you know, like, look at what's happening in Texas right now with the Muslims. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are in a different time right now, and parents have got to pay attention, and they have to take control of their children's education, the things that their kids are exposed to. And you may have to, you know, one thing I learned is that I'm at a city council meeting talking to the city council in a small town. And then I'm going to church with people that actually are related to these city council members. And these people at church don't like what I'm saying to their grandpa or their aunt or whoever.
And well, welcome to our world, because I just attended a wedding well out of state up in Vermont, but that's not the point where I was. But when people were asking me about the job that I do, it was like, well, tell me about it. What's it like? And my explanation to them is people can disagree with you. There may be people out there that are very mad at me, and I have no idea that they are. But also, when you're dealing with local issues, when you're dealing with issues that affect people, if we have five stories in the morning that are local, well, to me, or five or ten or whatever, and some maybe even have got to do with policy, or there's this side and then that side to it, not just a crime story. What you end up with is, to me, that's just a story in the news, and maybe I give my opinion, maybe I don't, depending on the story. To the persons involved in the story, this is the biggest thing in their lives. Mm-hmm. So when I comment on this story, maybe flippantly or otherwise, well, to me, I'm just kind of doing my job, but the audience expects me to have a take on this one way or the other. But to the person that maybe is offended by that, it's a big deal. And when it's local, you feel it, and that's what you're talking about. You spoke at this council meeting, and you were pretty much an unknown. You were new from the state of Washington, and now suddenly, rather than being anonymously going through your life and making cookies and doing all this thing, you put yourself in a position where suddenly people were going to know who you were, and that was a little bit frightening.
Yeah, and I think, too, I've never been involved in politics in Washington state. I just wasn't. And so that was a mistake that I had made, because I was in this tiny little tiny suburb, very conservative, Trump signs, Trump flags, everything. And then all of a sudden it just took over where I lived. And by the time I realized what was happening, it was just too late. And so I just thought, I'll just go let them know before it gets to the point where it was where I lived before.
So you weren't in Fairhope long before you made the appearance?
Only a couple of months.
That's crazy.
And so here's the thing, though. You know, first of all, moving to a small town in the South from the West Coast is I can't even tell you when we were moving in how many people stopped at my house and said, what are you doing here? What's, you know, they literally would ask me, you know, what do you believe? What do you think? Well, I just assume they're asking me, are you bringing your ideas with you? Mm-hmm. Like the ideas from where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. It never occurred to me that, you know, like right now there's like 40 homes in my neighborhood with Doug Jones signs. That never occurred to me. And so I think what I've learned is that, you know, when you move to a little southern town and you're not, you know, from the South, mm-hmm. you know, I could have taken a little bit more time to kind of figure out the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. But I just felt a panic, and I just thought, well, I'm just going to let them know. They probably just don't know. And so, anyway,
how's the church played a role in that? You say you go to church. As it turned out, you go to the same church as Jeff Poor.
Yeah.
He covered you in that initial story.
Yeah.
And now you're like, okay, now I know the guy. I can have a relationship with this guy. And you're trying to say, take the story down. He says, I can't take the story down. But beyond that, the other church members, now you're finding out what their views are.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are people at church who won't speak to me.
Hmm.
There are people at church who don't want their kids playing with my son because of something I've said to their family member. You know, or I went to a Board of Education meeting and said something that someone doesn't like. Maybe they're a teacher. You know, I have no idea.
Are you going to keep, is it going to change your behavior?
No, because I do believe that I do the right thing and God will just take care of the rest. I cannot allow, I can't just sit there and do nothing and watch things happening. I just can't do it. It's not in my nature. I've prayed about it. I wish God would just take this away from me because it's not an easy life. But it's also a responsibility that I believe has been laid onto me, and it's the right thing to do. I mean, nothing that I'm saying is crazy. It's really just, you know, leave the kids alone. I was always raised to be in a very moderate home, you know, mm-hmm.
Not politically crazy one way or the other.
Either way.
Yeah.
But, you know, just raised to, if people are nice to you, you're nice to them. And I worked in, you know, advertising. I've held jobs where I've worked with all different kinds of people and lived in a lot of different places where there's, I mean, I've lived in Alaska, California, Oregon, Washington. I was born in North Carolina. I mean, I've been exposed to a lot of different people. And so it's not hard to get along with people. If you don't like someone, you just stay away from them.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that happened, the cultural shift that happened, which I didn't realize was happening until COVID, I do believe that changed everything,
mm-hmm.
Is that they were coming after the children. And there was always that line. I feel like there was a line. And the other point I want to make is that, you know, people just assumed that, you know, all the gays were in it they all agreed upon it, you know. And they want the kids to be exposed to all this stuff. And that's just not the truth.
Hmm.
There's so many gay people that I know in Fairhope that don't agree with the indoctrination.
With the movement, yeah.
They want those sexually explicit books moved to the adult section. They don't think that kids belong at a drag show. And that was the other thing they were doing in Fairhope. There was a family-friendly drag show. And it's just, you know, there's a line there. And we're adults. And
sure.
We can make choices. We can cut our body parts off or do the things that we want to do.
As adults.
As an adult. But when you have kids, they do not understand the consequences of what they're doing, and so it's my job to make sure that my kids are mothered by me,
yeah,
and not a political ideology or crazy people.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
All right,
I mean that's I get you 100%.
Good. Okay, we'll be right back. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5.
Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know I look a fright. Anyway, my eyes are not a cuss.
still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they said,
"Can you welcome back?" This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5. Dan, do we have any texts that you want to read?
Yeah. I've got one that says, don't let those bunch of haters get to you, Rebecca.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Also, a text, unnamed texter says, you cannot, not all caps, just show up in a community and demand that they change.
I totally agree with that. And you know the funny thing about that is that I thought that those people that were doing the Gay Pride Festival and the drag show, I thought they were trying to change where I moved. Mm. I didn't realize
that you were
my ideas were trying to change that.
Yeah. Maybe 10 years earlier did that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, hey, I don't know. I thought I moved to Alabama and I just in my head, you know.
Surprised by what you ended up saying.
I think so. So anyway.
And we have a special guest.
We have a guest this morning, Danielle Duggar, who is the Republican nominee of House District 96. She's also the Republican nominee of the Alabama Republican State Executive Committee. And I'm just so grateful that you made time to come in this morning. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah. I guess, you know, do you want to tell a little bit about yourself? Like,
sure.
Tell us, you know, what made you run for House District 96?
Yes. So I ran for this seat in 2022. We did pretty well. I had a small grassroots team of volunteers, campaigned for about 3 months, and we got close. I got 45% of the vote that time, and that was prompted primarily by COVID. The legislature's handling of COVID specifically. So I was just really appalled that our legislature failed to take action when people were being forced out of their jobs simply because they refused to take a brand new experimental vaccine. Long story short, that's what prompted me to run. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see the legislature responding to the needs of the community. And when we have 300,000 emails being sent regarding this issue, when you have, you know, thousands of Alabamians being pressured out of their jobs, you know, because over a vaccine, when you have churches closing, schools closing, and children forced to wear masks when we did reopen, and the legislature's not responding to that, we have a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the vaccine issue. It's an issue of who has the power. Is it the people? And if the legislature is there as representative of the people, why didn't they take action? You know, permanent, meaningful action.
Yeah, I'm so interested to know what your take is on this whole Fauci, you know, the hearing. And
yeah,
I mean, they're talking about things that we've always known. Mm-hmm. Because I remember when this was happening where I lived, I started researching things right away. I'm not putting a mask on my kids. I'm not giving them an experimental vaccine. I mean, to me, it was just obvious what was going on. But there's so many people that were afraid, that wanted to travel, that wanted to go to the, you know, basketball game.
And I mean, Fauci lied to them.
And he lied. He
Bottom
was lying.
Line.
Yes, he was lying the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your take on this?
Well, he should be prosecuted. I mean, he should be held criminally liable. That auto pen blanket immunity that he was giving should not stand up. Should not hold up in court. He should have his day in court. And the system behind Fauci, because Fauci is just the head mm-hmm. of it. He was not the mastermind. There's a whole system that's responsible for what happened, for deceiving the American public, for forcing people to take things that have now, we know, injured them. I mean, even just the masking of our children, we've seen the education setbacks that we've had because of it. Now, looking back, we can see the damage. And the whole system should be responsible for what happened. So not just Fauci, but all of them. All of them are responsible. What happened to Birx? Where is she at?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was not something that just occurred naturally. Now we know. You know, this was created. This was gain-of-function research that was funded by our government. And they need to be responsible for the deaths, the losses, the loss of, you know, income. People lost their businesses, their livelihoods. It destroyed the economy. I mean, the supply chain is just now coming back online. Mm-hmm. There's just untold consequences of that. And someone should be responsible for those lies.
And do you remember when Rand Paul, he was questioning him in a hearing? He was questioning Fauci. And Fauci, he questioned him about the gain of function. And he lied under oath.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that a consequence?
It should be. That's why he's got that immunity. What is it? The pardon.
The pardon, yeah.
But that needs to be thrown out.
I didn't realize you could pardon someone for a crime that they haven't been convicted of.
Unheard of. And, you know, went all the way back to 2014. Well, what's the significance of that date?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on back in 2014?
Yeah.
And suppressing known treatments. You know, we had doctors mm-hmm. in Florida that were coming to Texas that were speaking out saying, this is what we're using in the hospital. This is what's working. This is helping people. I've had, you know, 30,000 COVID patients and I've only lost one or I've lost zero. These doctors were speaking out. Their medical licenses were being threatened because they spoke out. And the known treatments that they were using and trying to collaborate with one another across states, letting other doctors in other areas know, hey, here's a good protocol that we're using and it's working. That was being suppressed in favor of the experimental vaccine that was not shown to stop transmission or infection.
Yeah, it's just crazy when you think about it. Anyway.
Yeah. We could talk all day on
we
that.
We could. So as you were walking around and door knocking your 5,000 doors that yes. you did to win this seat, what was the biggest concerns that your constituent or, you know, your voter base, what were they concerned about? What did they mention?
Primarily infrastructure. That was the one thing that people were very upset about. They're sitting in traffic all day on their way to school, on their way to work, coming home from work, especially in certain areas of Daphne and Spanish Fort. We have a lot of backup. So traffic was their number one complaint. Followed by consumption tax. So, you know, our property tax is not very high, but in Alabama, we're taxed on everything else. So, you know, I'm surprised we don't have a breathing tax here in Alabama. That was the primary concern is traffic, tax increasing. You know, they feel like they're being priced out. And some other environmental concerns. The solar farm had just been introduced, I think, at the very end of the campaign there. We know it was in the works for a while, but the mm-hmm. public only found out about it. I think it was at the tail end of the campaign, and people were concerned about that as well. The solar farm I'm referring to is up in Stockton. That was proposed up there. I don't remember the acreage, but it was large. It was very large.
Oh, gosh. It was 4,000. Wasn't it?
Was it 4,700
45? Yeah, it was a lot.
A lot of that's going to be the things that are going to keep you from seeing anything. Buffered, yes. That will be the farmland that's buffered.
Right. And there was wetlands around that, too.
Yeah, there were concerns about wetlands. So primarily environmental concerns, but really traffic was the number one thing people wanted to talk about, and they wanted to pay less at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Not just our state tax, but, you know, you're paying county tax, city tax, and the cost of groceries is still high. We still have very expensive milk and a carton of eggs, you know, so relief from increased pricing.
Okay. You know, one thing that in regards to increased pricing is the cost of homes.
Yeah.
Like, how are the young people supposed to be able to buy a home?
That was a concern of a lot of the older folks that I spoke with. They said that their children are moving out of the county to try and afford something, you know, or they're just succumbed to the fact that they're just not going to be able to afford to buy a home, which is kind of common way of thinking with Gen Z and Gen Alpha. They're just thinking we can't afford home prices.
Yeah, I have a 32-year-old, and that's, you know, what he's thinking. So
we've got to, you know, increase economic development so that we've got good paying jobs here that people can work at and not have to go out of the county to work, and they can live here, raise their families here, afford a home here.
Yeah.
So that's something we definitely need to continue to focus on, which I think they've done a really good job of that, but we have to protect quality of life while we're boosting our economy. That's going to be really important going forward in the next 30 years.
What are your like top three legislative priorities?
I would love to see, well, number one priority going in as a newbie is to learn the process. I've, you know, I'm a legislative analyst. I know the legislative process, but I need to learn the people, the politics in Montgomery. I need to learn their system specifically. So just getting in there, learning how I can be effective. Priority number one.
This is Rebecca filling in for Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5. We'll be right back.
Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South.
Welcome back. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor, FM Talk 106.5. Hey, if you have any questions for Danielle, go ahead and text 251-343-0106, and Dan will be happy to read your question.
I'll be delighted.
Yes. So I guess tell me, you know, looking ahead over the next 8 years, what's your vision for Alabama? You know, what do you hope our state looks like? If,
So, you know, my vision for Alabama would be we should be leading the nation in freedom, liberty, conservatism. We are Alabama. We are the heart of the South, right? I want to see enormous economic prosperity for our state so we can lead in all those other areas. You got to have money to do it, right? So we've got to have continue to build up our economy. Like, you know, we've seen over the past couple years, we've really seen some booms, but we have to protect our quality of life while we do that. So I would love to see education just blossom. And we need to take a hard look at our education standards. We need to look at technology, the way it's being used in the classroom, and how much of it children being, you know, how much of it they're exposed to, and how beneficial is that for them. So if we can be leading in education, in freedom and liberty, in the economy, we, you know, Alabama could be the greatest state in the nation. We have so many natural resources. We have wonderful, intelligent, smart, God-fearing people here. We have so much to work with that we could truly lead. Not let Florida take the lead. Let's show the nation what Alabama can do and protect freedom, liberty, property rights, and quality of life as we do it, you know, which sounds like a challenge, but it's really not. Just continue to invest in the industry that we currently have that's existing instead of expanding. We've got to invest more in workforce development. So like we were talking about earlier, these kids can find good jobs here, because if you've got industry coming into the county, but you don't have skilled labor force to work in that industry, what good is it? So we've got to have workforce development and let kids know there are other avenues other than a four-year degree. So you can earn a good living, you can have good quality of life with some skilled labor. And like I was saying earlier with education, we have to look at what we're teaching our kids and the amount of technology we're using, and is it beneficial? Because the education that our founding fathers, you know, were taught, we're brought up in, is classical education. Okay, this is what creates genius minds, entrepreneurs, out-of-the-box thinking. We need to nurture and foster that kind of educational atmosphere so that we will have thinkers and leaders that will solve the next crisis and that will lead us into the next century. If we're just dumbing our kids down, forcing them to memorize facts in order to prepare for the next test, or sticking them on screens all day, we're not doing them a service, and we are hurting our state and, you know, the future of our state. So I'm all for learning the latest and greatest technology, but we've got to look at how our children are learning. So is paper and pencil better? Do we return to paper and pencil? Do we re-examine our state education standards? Limit the amount of screen time. Focus on learning technological tools like AI tools and software tools that kids are going to need when they grow up and graduate and start real jobs, that tools they'll need through college. But really just get back to reading, writing, and real education so we can foster individualism, and imagination and critical thinking and out-of-the-box thinking that's going to lead us, that's going to lead the state of Alabama.
I read that this is the first time in 40 years where our kids today are cognitively behind our previous generation.
Yeah. We've got to look at technology and we've got to look at our education standards. I think we're doing our children a disservice. Technology is great, but we want the kids to be mastering the technology, not the technology mastering and controlling our children in our schools.
And I think, too, it really matters when it's introduced. I don't think in elementary school that's the... when we were in school, you learned, you know, technology. That was a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that it's definitely we're using a lot more technology than we did when I was in school, but... maybe started in middle school then, but to have kindergartners having tablets and they bring them home and,
I don't think it's appropriate.
It's way too much for them.
We've seen that it's not increasing learning. It's not increasing educational outcome. So we've got to peel that back. I'm in favor of going back to computer labs where you have a class, you go into the computer lab, you learn computer skills, you learn the latest software, you learn typing, you learn components of a computer. So if something breaks, you know how to fix it. I mean, this is stuff we learned back in my day, you know, and we're proficient. We know how to type. We know how to use the latest and greatest technology. It's not foreign to us, but we also know how to read and write and hold a pencil and memorize facts and recite things and think creatively and imaginatively. And we're losing some of that in favor of technology. The social media aspect is huge and harming kids. So I would just love to see Alabama become just a beacon of, you know, great education, booming economy, and freedom and liberty preservation.
Well, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine anyone complaining about that.
No.
Let's talk about the toll bridge. That's a big topic.
Frustrating topic.
Yeah. Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
So folks may remember back in 2022 when I ran on a platform of no tax, no tolls, no mandates. And I still believe we should not be tolled for this bridge, and a lot of voters are very upset about it. When I went door to door talking to 4,700 folks at their door, well, about half of them answered and spoke with me. That was one thing that they were not happy about. They didn't want to be told. My husband, for example, travels to Mobile for work every day, and he doesn't want to have to pay, what is it, $60 a month for his pass to go to work. So if we're going to toll the bridge, I would love to see an exception for Baldwin County residents who work in Mobile that they go across for free.
Vice versa?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Vice versa, because we're a bedroom community in Baldwin County. Hopefully that will change in the coming years, but most of our industry is over in Mobile, and so most people travel across the bridge every day to go work. So this interstate bridge is being used for industry across the southeast, across our nation. This is an interstate federal highway. So why should Baldwin County and Mobile County residents be paying the lion's share of that toll, even with the discounted rate? Tourists aren't paying $60 a month to use our bridge. We're paying it. So I just don't think it's right for it to be built on our backs. And if we had not spent $2 billion on the West Alabama corridor, maybe that money could have been spent here on the bridge and our people would not have to pay that toll. That's not fair. So we need someone who's going to advocate for the coast in Montgomery and make sure those dollars, we need to bring the bacon home, right? That's our tax dollars being sent up to Montgomery. We need to fight for our share of that to come back down here so we don't see another $2 billion spent in West Alabama where we have vital infrastructure needs right here that drive the economy of Alabama. That bridge and that port is vital to our economy. Why are we spending money elsewhere when that should be our number one priority? And if we had more people in leadership from the coast speaking up for the coast for our needs, maybe we wouldn't be in this situation.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, the West Alabama corridor is that's a head scratch for anybody that's paying attention this much. Yeah. But we do have a lot of people that don't pay attention even this much, and they don't really know about it. But another break.
Well, another break, and thank you, Danielle, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate your insight, and I hope that everybody learned a little bit of something.
Don't forget to vote November 3rd, Danielle Duggar, House District 96.
Yes, ma'am. We'll be right back. This is Rebecca Watson filling in for Jeff Poor. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.